What's up, everybody? It's Lee, otherwise known as Intuition, and you're tuned into Kinda Neat. Thank you for coming back one more time. As always, I'm going to start the show with our social media stuff, and then, you know, maybe a little bit about what's going on in my life. So if you don't want to hear this, fucking skip forward till you hear a beat. I don't care. First and foremost, you can follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition, ITSINTUITION. Follow my man, Ben Shim, behind the boards at I Am Database. You can follow us as a unit at That's Kinda Neat. You can find all of our YouTube videos on youtube.com/That's Kinda Neat. Channel's going good. I think we broke like 3,000 subscribers, which is crazy. Super stoked about that. The subscribers are going way faster than we could have imagined. I thank you guys so much for subscribing and tuning in. Been getting good comments and compliments about how you guys are really enjoying the channel, and that means a lot to us, so thank you. Be sure to visit us on iTunes, and if you use the podcast app on your iPad or your iPhone or iPod or whatever, subscribe to that, leave us a comment, rate it, be nice to us. We appreciate it. And then also you can find everything on our content portal, which is kindaneat.net, which just rolls off the tongue. I want to actually reach out to you guys if you're listening. This is our 20th episode, and for 20 episodes I've looked at our little picture that shows up on our channel, you know, like when you subscribe and stuff. The logo is something that I designed last second, and I don't know shit about design. I know enough about design to know like what bad design is, and our logo that says Kinda Neat, hosted by Intuition, with like the white noise TV screen background, it's shitty design. I know that. The only thing I like about it is the teal color that the letters are. So, with that being said, I want to reach out to you guys, any of you that listen. I know that some of you guys are creative people. A lot of you guys are creative people because this is a podcast about creative people, and I'm sure that creative people are probably the ones that might be interested in it. If there are any designers tuned in listening, I would like to reach out to you to see if we could have you redesign our logo. The only stipulations is that you need to keep that teal color. Other than that, it's completely open. Other than that, it needs to be a square format. So, if you are interested in redesigning our logo, there's really no prize involved other than glory and knowing that you redesigned it. And I will shout you out for a few weeks, I guess. Go ahead and just tweet at me at That's Kinda Neat with your designs. If it happens and you guys make some new designs, I'll pick one and then it'll be our new logo. And hopefully within the next couple episodes, we'll have a couple great submissions, and then I'll pick one. Maybe I'll put it up to vote on the site or something and let the audience pick. But basically, I just hate my logo and I want a new one. So make something that says Kinda Neat, hosted by Intuition. And yeah, that would be great. What else happened this week? I got rear-ended while I was driving home from Oceanside. I was down there at work, and Ben, it was one of your people. It was a Korean girl. I got hit by a Korean girl. As soon as she got out the car, she rear-ended me. I was probably going about 15, slowing down, and she was probably going about 35. You know, just hear boom, and I've been rear-ended a bunch of times, and I never really know how to act. I always just end up banging my fists on the steering wheel and being like, fuck! And so that happened, and it felt like she hit me really hard. So I'm like, fuck, this is like going to be a real bitch. But then I got out the car and the damage wasn't that bad. It was like, you know, I got a plastic bumper on my Honda Civic and it was just a scratch on it. Wasn't a big deal. But as soon as she got out of the car, she goes, I'm so sorry, I dropped my phone on the ground. And I'm like, you fucking idiot. Like, you shouldn't say that you dropped your phone on the ground. Like, the first rule of hitting somebody is that you're not supposed to say, oh, my fault. Like, it says it on your insurance card, don't admit fault. Now, granted, it's pretty clear cut when you get rear-ended that it's the person who rear-ended you's fault. So anyways, I go to like make a claim through my insurer, and then my insurer informs me that after contacting her, she's down to like pay me directly rather than going through my insurance. And I've never done that before. This shit feels kind of shady to me. Like, I'm comfortable going through my insurance. Like, they rip me off so hard every fucking month and shove it up your ass that it's like, you might as well utilize them sometimes. You know what I mean? You pay, think about how much fucking money you've put into insurance that never comes back to you because they never do shit for you. And then after all the money that you put into the insurance, if you ever cause a wreck that's your fault, your fucking insurance goes higher. And it's like, hey man, I've already paid so much fucking money into that insurance. Why do you need to raise my rates? Because the fact that you had to spend however much money to fix the other person's accident still doesn't add up to all the money I've given you over the years. Anyway, insurance is a fucking hustle. I hate it. But it felt shady going like outside of insurance. But my agent told me like, oh yeah, just go get an estimate. And then, you know, you guys just settle it however you want to settle it, you know, wink, wink. And I'm like, all right. So I went and get an estimate. And it was a certain amount of money. And I get an estimate on a rental car while it's going to be in the shop. And that was a certain amount of money. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, if she wants to do this so that it doesn't show up on her insurance and make her insurance rates higher, she's obviously trying to protect her ass. So, you know, I'm going to make it more worthwhile for myself. So those estimates that I got, I may or may not have padded them a little when I told her, yeah, if you give me this amount of money, then I'll cancel the claim. And she goes, okay, cool. But can you send receipts for the damages? And I'm like, and I tell her at this point, I'm like, you know what? I don't really want to send receipts. That's just more chores for me to do. Like, I don't have a fax machine. I don't want to send you receipts. And I call my brother and I say, hey, look, man, I told her this amount of money, but it may or may not have been only really this amount of money to get it fixed. And he's like, yo, man, that's illegal, dog. That's fraud. And that's this and that and the other. You could do jail for that. And I said, man, do jail for like a couple, maybe or maybe not a couple hundred dollars. Like, what are you talking about? That sounds a little crazy to me. And then I call my other friend, who's like another member of my brain trust, and he goes, nah, dog, you're tripping. You better fucking triple that shit. He's like, and then you just Photoshop all the receipts. He said, don't even get a rental car. He said, get an estimate from the rental car place and fucking Photoshop the estimate to say invoice and then triple all that shit too. He's like, fuck it. And I'm like, man, that sounds like a lot of work too. So I got an angel on my left shoulder telling me, no, don't do that. And a devil on my right shoulder going, man, you better go even harder than that. So my compromise was somewhere in the middle where I told her, look, I don't want to send you receipts because I'll be honest, I'm padding it a little bit because I only got an estimate. And if my car gets up on the fucking thing and they find out there's more wrong with it because of damage that you caused, then I want to make sure that I have money there to get it all fixed and not just some of it fixed, because if I went through my insurance or your insurance, then they would just fix it with no questions asked. So like, I'm going to be honest, like if I send you receipts, they're not going to match up. And so at that point she goes, well, let me talk to my dad. And I said, of course, go ahead, talk to your dad. And she texts me back and says, okay, you don't got to send receipts. Just write an email that you'll cancel the claim and you'll never try to take us to court for it. And I said, oh yeah, no problem. So, you know, she sent me a check. The check cleared, and I'll be damned. I don't know if I'm going to get my car fixed at all, to tell you the truth. The damage isn't really that bad. I might just go over with a Sharpie marker or something. Fuck it. But yeah, so that's nice. Like, it's nice to have a little chunk of change from some padding, you know? So yeah, you know, don't drop your phones when you're driving. And if you do drop your phone, don't rear-end anybody. And if you rear-end anybody, don't tell them that you dropped your phone, because that's just dumb. And also, fuck insurance. It's a ripoff. This week on Kinda Neat, we have an old buddy of mine, JJ. You guys will know him as Mestizo. Mestizo is a man about town. He seems to know everybody, and everybody knows him. And he has, like, secret handshakes with everybody, too. Very cool guy. It was a good conversation. He's had an interesting life. He was very nomadic and all over the place, and that's part of the reason that he knows everybody. But then the fact that he was nomadic and was, like, had to be by himself, and, you know, he had to make friends however he could, made him a very outgoing individual, which is another reason that he just knows everybody. Easy guy to talk to. So, yeah, this interesting story about where he's from, how his crew Maquina Muerte started. We had Cadillac Ron on here earlier, who's from Maquina Muerte. So interesting little tidbits of history in here. So without any further ado, this is Kinda Neat with Mestizo. You still get the free Supreme hookups?
I never got, well, yeah, I did get the free Supreme hookups, but now it's just kind of a discount because I don't work on the block anymore.
Yeah. How long did you work on the block?
7 years. Eight years.
You were on Fairfax for 8 years? I didn't even know, like, Fairfax was cool for 8 years.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting.
It's around for a while.
How did you start off there?
Turntable Lab.
Oh,
me,
yeah.
Me and Gas Lamp Killer started there together.
You guys used to work there together.
Yeah.
So, what, like, 2004, 2005?
I think it was 05.
Yeah?
Had it been 05.
Was he already getting his buzz at that time?
No, not at all.
Nah. How was he before the buzz? Was he
cool? He's still the same.
Cool to work with?
Wild.
He's a wild character. Yeah, for certain.
Yeah, he wasn't. That's where he started getting his buzz at.
At Turntable Lab?
He got it out of nowhere, too, because we worked with Blue Gems and Gina Turner, and like that's when Diplo and all those guys started to blow up, too, and they were coming out of Turntable Lab.
Really?
Yeah.
It's crazy. You know the first place that I saw Diplo play? Scribble Jam 05.
Wow.
How about that? He was not even on the main stage. He was like,
that when James won?
No, that was, it was the year that this Australian kid won named Justice.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, yeah, and the opening night, not even on the main stage, like the opening party night, it's like in this weird, like, cave venue in Cincinnati. He was the DJ of the night.
That's so
crazy. Which is pretty crazy. It was when he put out that record called Florida.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, the Big Dada record.
It had Peace on it and everything.
I knew about that dude from Mediocre. Okay. He told me personally, he's like, yo, Mediocre is my favorite producer of all time.
Really?
I'm like, wow, that's crazy. Yeah, him and Media were tight. And I remember his beats used to be super underground hip-hop beats.
Yeah.
All his first beats were underground hip-hop beats.
Well, yeah, Florida came out and it was like, it was in the same like categories at the record shop as like RJD2 shit. Yeah. You know, it was instrumental hip-hop, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what he was into. I mean, I don't know, that's kind of the gateway to a lot of new music, you know.
Yeah, I always say all the smart people get out of underground hip hop,
but the smart people start in it too.
Yeah, they start in it and then they realize that the money's not there, and then they go to dance music. You know what I mean?
Then the bitter old men like me stay in it.
Exactly. Then you and I complain about like, oh, I knew him first.
Yeah. That's become my daily conversation. Like, did you know that guy before he was big?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, I knew that guy before he was big.
Exactly. Yeah, how do you know everybody?
I don't know everybody. I've been thinking about that a lot lately in my sober mind state. When I'm sober.
You've come up in a lot of these podcasts because you're kind of the spoon that stirs the pot with a lot of people that I've had on between me and them. I'm like, oh yeah, you know who put me on to you is JJ. Yeah, wow. Yeah, you've come up a few times.
That's tight.
Yeah, man. So
that's dope.
Where are you from originally? Because I know that's a hard question to ask.
I'm everywhere, dude. But
where were you born?
San Jose.
San Jose, California.
California.
And how long were you
the
there?
The Zay, baby!
Shout out to fucking...
I can't even say. I don't feel like I'm from San Jose. I can't say it with pride, but I am a Sharks fan.
How long were you there?
San Jose, I was born there and then was there until I was 6 years old, then moved back to New York with my mom and her family. Then we moved back to the Bay and we were in San Francisco. And then from there, I moved all around the Bay until I was about 15.
Born to Filipino mother?
Sicilian mom.
Sicilian mother, Filipino father. Sorry, my bad. I get it
Filipino
mixed up.
Father, yeah.
Filipino father, Sicilian mother.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because we take pride in our... Magumba.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, for sure. What's it like growing up as a mixed nationality moving all around? Was it hard to find your place?
No, I mean, it definitely kind of shaped who I am now. It's like I can fucking deal with any kind of people. But I grew in every neighborhood I lived in. I've lived in like all white neighborhoods, all black neighborhoods, all Mexican neighborhoods. And I've always been something different to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I don't know. I don't genuinely relate to any culture. You know what I mean? So it's just like, I'm comfortable with being a mutant.
You're kind of just a man of the people, though, at the same time.
I get along with everybody, pretty much.
Yeah.
You know?
Very outgoing individual.
Kind of like you.
I don't get along with everybody. I get along with everybody on the surface, but everyone secretly hates me. That's what it is.
You've ripened it to quite a good apple, bro.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So why were you moving around so much as a kid?
When I was a kid, I don't know. It was like, you know, my pops is crazy.
How so?
Crazy drug addict when I was a kid. I mean, he was, he was into crazy shit, drug dealing, doing drugs and all that kind of fucking crazy shit during the crack era.
Was he born in the States or was he?
Yeah, he was born in San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
But I have a long lineage of just crazy family members. Like my grandmother was murdered when he was like, I don't know, fucking 13 or something.
Oh, wow.
Because she was running with gangs in San Francisco when she moved from here to the Philippines, is what I was told.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so it kind of got passed down from, or even my great grandmother, she was fucking crazy as shit, too. She's awesome. Best woman I ever knew in my life. Fucking smoked weed until she was like 90. You know what I mean? But it got kind of passed down all the way down to me. You know what I mean? So I think with that, my pops just like, he was on one. He just wanted to move around a lot. We ended up in New York with with my mom's family and then back in the Bay, and then they split.
How old were you when your folks split?
I think about 5 years old.
Oh, so young.
Yeah, I was pretty young, but you know, it's like I'm so conscious of all that shit because it was such a vivid, I have such a vivid memory of like these really fucking events that should be painful, but more they were just like an experience to kind of shape who I am.
And you stuck with mom, or did you?
Yeah, well, I was with mom until I was about, I think 13 or 14, then she kicked me out. Then my pops is back in my life. Then we were homeless, so we were just driving around every state.
Well, let's slow down, because there's so much to cover, I feel like, in what you just did. You skipped through like 8 years. So you moved to New York for a little while, and then you moved back to the Bay. When you moved back to the Bay, your folks are still together?
Yeah.
Why did this split up? Was your dad just getting too heavy into crazy shit?
Yeah, he's fucking addicted to crack. So.
Oh, wow.
He was just like, you know. He was going, wow, he's on a rampage.
And when you say, like, you have vivid memories of that, like...
I used to see a bunch of that shit around.
What is that around. Like through the eyes of a five-year-old or a six-year-old, you know?
I don't know. It was like, that's kind of the gangster era of, like, the late 80s. So, to me, it was kind of tight, you know? I don't know. I was trying to get into it more. I couldn't really understand shit. I already gravitated towards rap music at 5 years old, you know what I mean? Yo MTV Raps, all that shit was on, and... NWA was fucking huge. Everybody in my neighborhood were either bikers or fucking gang members, you know.
And so you were kind of experiencing what they were talking about.
Yeah. So it wasn't really like, wasn't anything bad to me until like you witness what your mom goes through. That's when that shit gets crazy. Yeah. You know what I mean?
What did your mom do for work to keep a roof over your head?
She, when we were younger, I don't remember. She had like three jobs. So I don't really remember what she was doing up until that. But then, I don't know, she went to school to be a paralegal or something, and then that's what she was doing for a little while.
And so dad was just hustling.
Hustling and, you know, going from girl to girl.
It was it one of those things where when he was home, it was kind of like, I mean, were they fighting a lot when he was home and shit before she kicked them out?
Like
throwing shit or what?
Yeah, it wasn't like, my pops is never like, he's not violent towards women because he grew up getting his ass fucking put in the hospital by his parents, you know?
Right.
So... it wasn't like violent like that, but yeah, my mom's Sicilian, bro. It's like, you know how it is.
Oh, yeah.
Just fucking loud, dude.
Yeah, they're loud.
Crazy and nutty and take shit. They're so sensitive, and the way that they show their sensitivity is just like screaming in your fucking face.
Yeah, you know? I mean, Italian blood boils, you know?
It's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's nutty. I got it in me, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Has it affected your relationships as an adult?
Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah?
Fuck yeah.
How
I'm
so?
A lot like my mom when it comes to relationships. Just like, I'm just hard to deal with. I'm crazy, dude.
I mean, I'm half Italian, too, and I have a hard time. Like, when I get mad, I have a hard time cooling off.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Like, I'll be with a girl, and she'll be like, she's like, you know, we'll get mad, and then it'll be 3 hours later, and she's like, I don't understand why you're still mad. And I'm like, because nothing has been fixed yet. I'm still fucking pissed off, you know? It's hard to cool off.
Yeah, I mean, that shit's fucking super hard for me, man. I'm like, I've gotten over punching walls and... you know, throwing shit and all that kind of stuff. But I'm not violent. I'm not like a domestic violence.
Yeah, I've never been a violent dude. I'm just a yeller.
Yeah.
I yell. That's
it. I wouldn't lay a hand on a woman, man. That's just not me.
Yeah. I think that's ingrained in us by positive female role models as well. Where, like, my mom might call me a son of a bitch and I might think that's funny, but, you know, we would never, like, raise a hand. You know what I'm saying? That's just not how it works.
Yeah. No, it's not.
So, mom and dad split, and then was he out of your life for a while?
Yeah. I mean, he was fucking. Well, for one, you know, it's like that typical shit where I think my dad, well, this is what happened. My pops, I'm sorry, pops, if you fucking get mad at me for saying this, but this is what happens. It's like, you know, man cheats on the woman, woman's fucking upset, and then forever holds a grudge, you know. But in this case, my pops fucking went out and had a kid with another woman. You know, I didn't know. Skip 14 years later, I had no idea I had a little brother until I was 14.
Oh, no,
you
know shit. What
I mean? Wow. So, because my mom's just fucking, she's Sicilian, she's pissed, want to keep a grudge, all that kind of shit.
Right. So at the point that he's gone, do you
guys stay? Yeah, she didn't want him in my life.
You guys stay in the Bay for a while, or do you move again?
No, I stay in the Bay.
How long were you there?
About probably another like 8 years.
And to this day, like Bay Area gangster rap is kind of your shit, right?
It'll always be
that's
my
like
shit.
A, that's
well,
like
the era of it is before I left was that the real like Mac Dre shit, not the hyphy shit. That
right.
was never my kind of shit.
That's still a big influence in your music today, right?
Yeah, hell yeah.
For sure. You said that your mom kicked you out at 13. What happened there?
Well, she threw me on the BART to San Francisco. My uncle picked me up and then dropped me off with my pops and slept under a tent for like a fucking year and a half. So.
Wow, so you were sleeping outside with your dad for a year and a half?
Well, we had a van, but him and his chick, his old lady. My pops used to run with a bunch of Hells Angels and shit. So it was like he had an old lady, you know, they were just, I don't know what they were doing. I think they were tweaking a grip and shit. So I was just fucking sleeping under a tent for a year and a half, writing raps and smoking weed, you know?
Wow, were you going to school?
No, I was out of school at that age.
Did you ever go back to school?
No. I didn't have a home address, so I was just like, fuck it.
No shit.
Yeah.
I had no idea. So, wow, you're a school dropout at 13. Like, this.
Well, 14. 14. I think it was 14. Yeah,
does dad tell you, like, you got to start, like,
he gave me the
life?
Option to go back, but I was like, dude, I don't have a fucking house to go home to. Like, I don't want to do that. I'll just get my GED.
Yeah, where know? Am I supposed to do homework?
Yeah,
oh, yeah, so you went and got your GED.
Yeah, I got my GED. Like, I wanted to fucking go through all that high school shit. I really wanted to have that kind of, like, normality that everybody experienced. That I have seen, or maybe it was just on TV, but like I always wanted to have like a normal fucking life. It just never worked out that way.
Do you feel like you have a normal life now?
Fuck no.
No? Is it something you still fantasize over?
I'm trying to make it a normal life, that's for sure.
I mean, what's normal to you?
I don't know, like Leave It to Beaver, that kind of shit, you know?
that's extraordinarily normal. I don't know if that exists.
That shit's tight, man. Yeah. I think that's kind of more of my era. I'd rather live in the 40s and the 50s. If I'm going to do crime, I want to have like a fucking classy criminal background, you know?
Right. The noble criminal. Yeah. That's crazy. I had no idea that you dropped out and got your GED. So what age did you go back and get your GED?
I went back when I was fucking 21. That's when I got my GED.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
During that time when you're 14 and living under a tent or in a van, like, what are you doing? Other than writing
literally
raps?
Only fucking listening to music, smoking weed, and living off of, like, social security checks that my dad's girl was fucking getting.
Wow.
But that was it. But we were traveling so much that it was like, it wasn't boring. I wasn't staying in one place, you know.
Where were you guys traveling?
I think after we left Santa Rosa, we went to Las Vegas. And that was tight. Because, we're in like an RV parking lot, just chilling, cooking out. But everything was so cheap. And it was like pools and Circus was there. And I was already getting high as shit. So all I
was just
going to
ask, like,
and walk around.
I was going to say, in that environment, it seems like drugs would be just around.
Perfect. It was, that's all I did back then.
Yeah. When did you start experimenting with weed?
Weed probably about fucking, honestly, in my 10th birthday, I got a joint from.
Wow.
One of my family members, yeah.
Yeah, crazy. But were you seeing your dad and his friends do harder drugs in front of you?
I saw it a couple times. It wasn't like it was in my face. He kept it pretty hidden from me.
Right.
I didn't know until a couple of years ago at points in time when he was high. So,
yeah,
it was kind of crazy.
I mean, when you're running with a nomadic group like that, are there other kids your age that are kind of in the same predicament?
No, I really didn't meet any other kids. Like, I would walk around by myself or just hang with myself. But I think that's why it's like I could gravitate to anybody. Like, I got a million fucking friends. Probably a bunch that I've pissed off because I don't even talk to them anymore, you know. But never really met any kids on the road until we would actually stop in the city. So,
what would you go do in Las Vegas?
Fuck Circus nonstop.
Just go in and...
Yeah,
like,
swim in Circus because, I mean, I think at that point we were there during the summer.
Uh-huh.
You know how it is in the summer. It's like fucking insanely hot.
So you just go try to find a pool to sneak into or something?
Yeah, that's it. And then, you know, go to buffets and chill out. I did a lot of I literally did nothing but write raps.
That's crazy.
Because at that period, I had already been rapping a grip, but all my homies only freestyled. So that was all we did. And then that's when I started getting into writing and I got sucked into it. That's all I did. I got books and books and books from when I was like 13 and 14, man.
That's crazy. After Vegas, what happened?
After Vegas, we went to Milwaukee.
Why Milwaukee?
My dad's girl was from there.
Okay.
So we chilled out there, and then we finally kind of settled into her parents' house.
And so Milwaukee's close to Chicago. Is that like when you ended up there?
No. I ended up in Chicago a lot later.
Really? So yeah. What would you do in Milwaukee?
I had a bunch of friends out there, man, that I met, and a bunch of just same old kind of kids like me that were just living in other people's houses at 14 and fucking... Uh-huh. paying rent and already working and out of school. So
yeah,
bunch of gangbanging kids.
Right. What was your style as a 14-year-old?
I was a gangster.
Yeah, like what? Big khakis and white tees, or what?
It was Dickies and Chucks and
yeah,
button up shirts.
Like pinning the Dickies to the back of the Chucks? Anything like
that? Nah, hell no. I never went that deep.
That's the ill shit. In Milwaukee, you're living at your dad's girl's folks' place.
How
were they accepting of that? Were they into it?
Yeah, they were cool.
Yeah?
Yeah, they were cool. I've always known how to get along with everybody that's older because I have fucking high respects for elders, you know?
Yeah.
I never was a mouthy kid to older people unless it would be a dick. Then I would say something, you know?
Right. But when was your first fist fight?
Oh, my God. That's like, I don't know, 4 years old, 5 years old?
Yeah. I mean, were you like a...
Yeah, I've been fighting all the way up until this point.
Yeah.
I'm still fighting.
Yeah.
A lot.
Right. And
I don't know. It's just a part of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, I really grew out of it.
You know, I'll be honest. Like, I'm not a fighter. I've never been a fighter. Like, I just don't... I don't have, like, a rage in me that I ever get mad enough to really want to sock anybody. I think I've only punched somebody in the face once, I think.
Yeah,
Where do you think that rage comes from? Because some people, man, like, you know...
I think it's taught from your family. Like, my family, all the men in my family, they're older, they're crazy, and they're just fucking... A lot of them were really, really violent.
Yeah. You know? I mean, like, did you ever have to loke up on your dad or anything?
Yeah, once, but I didn't want to fight him. I got scared.
How old were you?
I was 14.
Yeah, you don't want to fuck with your dad when you're
14.
My dad's
a maniac, dude. Yeah, exactly. I'm not fighting my dad.
Yeah, that rage
I would, though. That's the thing. I would, but I didn't want to fight him because I knew if I fought him, I would hold a grudge for the rest of my life. I would never want to talk to him again. I love my pops, you know?
Yeah.
He's a shit.
Yeah. Being nomadic and seeing your dad doing fucked up shit, is that like, do you have some inner fucking grudge inside you that makes you want to fight? Like, when you're fighting, are you taking out anything, or is it just like, yeah, hey, don't
honest,
fuck with
I
me.
Think it was more like I get that rage from my mom. I think me and her butted heads more than my pops.
Really?
He was out of the picture so much that I never could really even direct any anger towards him. So
right.
My mom and me were face to face all the time. So it's like, when you're face to face with your mom's got issues with you about what your father did, you look like your father, then, you know, it's like I was constantly in fucking grudge matches with her, you know?
Right, right.
So it's like a lot of my built up anger came from that, you know?
Right.
Mom issues. It's more mom issues than
daddy. Well, yeah.
I don't have those issues anymore. I worked them out.
Booting you out at 13, 14, like
pissed,
that's,
bro.
You know, that's like abandonment shit almost.
Yeah, I didn't talk to her for 8 years.
Wow. How did you guys finally make up?
I was all fucked up one night and I was like, I should probably call my moms and fucking deal with this shit instead of fucking running away from it.
Right. Well, how was that conversation?
She was tight.
Yeah.
Just put everything into the past and fucking move on, you know?
How did she react? Tears and stuff?
Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you guys didn't talk for 8 years. Was she surprised to get the call? Did she know your phone number?
I think she showed up at one of my apartments that I had when I was like 17, and she knocked on the door, and I was like, go away.
Oh, really?
I don't want to talk to you.
So it was face-to-face?
Yeah. It came up one day, and then we just fucking, I was like, I don't know. I figured it out. You know, as you get older, you start figuring a lot of shit out that you did wrong.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
I'm sure you can understand that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was just like, fuck, man, I probably should have her in my life, you know? If I'm on this fucking planet, and she brought me on this planet, so.
Yeah. Why'd she kick you out in the first place? Just fucking up in school or something?
She thought I was selling drugs.
Were you?
No, I wasn't, actually. At that time, I wasn't. I had been before, but I wasn't this.
So when she thought you were is when you were already over it or something?
Yeah.
Oh, crazy.
I wasn't over it. I just wasn't selling drugs
at
the time. She was calling, saying I was, and I wasn't. You know, it's like, she called me a liar, and I wasn't being a liar.
Yeah, yeah. So after Milwaukee, where did you go?
Phoenix. That's when we ended up in Phoenix.
And this whole time, your dad's running with, like, H&A dudes?
He used to, yeah, and he was still down with them, yeah.
Yeah.
I still got a lot of family members that are down with that
so
shit.
Did you grow up seeing, like, a lot of, like...
Bikers?
Alleged organized crime going on, or what?
I mean, I wasn't really paying attention, because I didn't give... I thought that shit was whack. I thought it was white boy shit. I didn't want to... I was like, that shit's whack, you know? I always wanted to run with the hip-hop shit.
Yeah.
She's weak.
Oh, that's funny.
But it wasn't, you know, to my knowledge, it was just like, it was around so much that I was just like, fuck, man. It wasn't for me, you know. I wanted the b-boying and fucking gangster rap shit. No, I remember a couple of my dad's friends being like, why you want to fucking run with that shit? Stupid. That shit's stupid.
How were you finding your hip-hop at this time, being so nomadic?
Well, I mean, at my age, everybody was down with that shit, you know. And in the Bay, it's like, everybody was trying to be into hip-hop, so...
Did you keep in contact with a lot of friends in the Bay when you were moving around still?
I only had like one best friend that I really gave a fuck about when I left.
Is he still around?
He's still around, but I don't know where. I saw a friend when I went back like randomly a couple months ago, and he was fucking came up and tried to bum a cigarette off me, and I was like, "Yo, fool, what's up?" He's like, "Yo, I'm living at the church now, fool."
Oh shit!
I was like, "Damn, dude, being in an apartment ain't so bad."
What brought you guys to Phoenix?
We actually threw darts at the fucking map. Yeah. I was like, my pop's like, where do you want to go? I was like, let's go back to Oakland. He's like, fuck no, I'm not going back there. He's like, let's just toss the darts.
Yeah. Ended up in Phoenix, man.
Well, we ended up in Phoenix first. Then we went up to Northern Arizona into Prescott, this little town. Crazy little weird meth out town.
Yeah.
And then 3 months later, went back to Phoenix. So
in this whole time, just still kind of living in the van or what?
Yeah. Like,
really?
Yeah.
How did you guys eat?
Like I said, we would get fucking government checks and shit every month. So.
How would the government checks find you if you guys were moving so much?
You can go to any Social Security.
Oh, and just go get that done. Wow. So you guys were living off next to nothing then?
Nothing.
And did you have little side hustles and stuff like that?
No, not until I got to Arizona. Then I met a bunch of Mexican mafia dudes and I started fucking.
And what happened with that?
I was just like, yo, you guys got, wait, let me fucking sell some shit. You know, I learned how to fucking hustle, you know?
And this is like, what, 17, 18?
No, this is 15.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you're still a youngster.
Yeah.
And
I was selling weed before, but like, it was only nickels and dimes, you know?
How did you meet the Mexican mafia dudes?
Like, same way I meet everybody. I don't know. Just randomly bump into the right people all the time.
Just saying.
I wouldn't call them, like, the right people. But, you know, for the time that I was going through shit, like, I needed the money, so.
Yeah. And was it something where it took them a while for them to trust you, or what, did they just kind of click?
Nah, they trusted me right away. Yeah. I think because I was so young and I was just honest and fucking, I was innocent in my criminal ways, you know.
Yeah.
It was like, they knew I stuck by a code. I always stuck by it. The code that I learned, I tried to stick by it in all my business shit, you know.
How long did you fuck with that?
I fucking did that shit forever. I didn't fuck with those guys for very long. I moved on to other shit because at that time, when I moved to Arizona, that's when I met a lot of my white homies that were into fucking, like, ravey shit. And then I started getting the rave money.
Really? Yeah. This was in, like, probably, what, 96,
97? 97.
Yeah, yeah, that's when the first rave kind of culture started to hit America.
It was popping, dude.
Yeah, so what, you were slanging X-Pills and shit like that?
Yeah, acid, Bibles of acid, fucking ecstasy, everything, dude, you name it.
Yeah, because you're like an old drum and bass head, huh?
Yeah, jungle.
Yeah, is that where you got into that?
That's where I got into that shit, dude. You know, it took me in a different direction than, like, you know, I was headed down a bad path. Like, it wasn't all cool living out of the van. I wasn't, like, I was pretty angry. I was a fucking shitty kid.
Uh-huh.
Up until the point I got to fucking Arizona. And then everything kind of opened up in a positive way.
Did you guys get a place there? Like, did you settle for a bit?
Yeah, we found, like, a small little cottage. And I was the first one with a job. I went and got a job, graveyard shift, at this place called Whataburger.
Oh, Whataburger.
Yeah.
Oh, man, they got good burgers.
This guy hired me illegally and shit. Like, you know, I gave him a fake name.
As a kid.
Yeah, as a kid. And I was just like, yo, I need to work graveyard shifts.
Huh.
So work there and then work somewhere in the day. And then hustle during the day and worked at this spot at night.
Right. And did Whataburger help you get some food, too?
Yeah.
Okay, kept the belly full?
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Hell yeah.
When did you get your first tattoo?
15. I traded this dude a dove sack in Arizona for it.
And what did you get?
My gang name on the back.
Really?
Yeah.
What does it say?
Vigilante.
Vigilante. Yeah. How did you adopt a gang name? From the Mexican mafia dudes?
No. I got, when I was in the Bay, I got jumped into this set. It's called Vigilante Boys, Vigilante Gangsta Crips.
No shit.
Yeah, this Filipino gang.
How old were you?
I was just trying to be hella Filipino, and I was down for fucking gangster shit. You know what I mean? I was 13.
13.
Yeah.
Wow. And was it something where you knew you were going to get jumped in, or was it a surprise?
It was a surprise about how many people that jumped us.
How many people?
It was about 50 people fucking waiting at the park for us.
50 people jumped.
We had to fight. We had to fight 10 of these dudes. One of us each had to fight. Then we had to fight each other. Then we had to get fucking swarmed on these dudes for like a fucking couple minutes, dude.
And what's that day like?
It was tight because I was the only one that stood on my feet the whole time.
Wow.
Yeah. And these dudes already didn't respect me, you know. It's like, I'm trying to be more Filipino, but I look more white than I do fucking Filipino, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then it was kind of tight to show these fools up.
Wow.
They're like, damn, this fool's the only one that stood up.
I mean, were these kids like...
These were men. These were all older men.
Were there guns around and shit like that?
I don't remember if they had guns. If they had guns, I didn't see them, but they're probably fucking put away. Because this was at the park. we were at a baseball park, and then we had to move it up to some fucking hill that we were on, and it just kept going on and on. But yeah, there wasn't no guns around. I don't know. They wouldn't bring guns to
I don't mean like at the park, but just at that time of your life after you get jumped into a gang. I mean, are you fucking seeing guns around just casually at that point too?
Not really, man. I didn't see a lot of guns.
Yeah, yeah.
I was never into guns when I was a kid. I was just into fighting.
Yeah, yeah.
If there was guns around, it was for a purpose, you know what I mean? Word. For like, if somebody was trying to ride on somebody, or if somebody was going to go pull a lick on a liquor store. A lot of these dudes were more into drug dealing.
You hear these things. I mean, I've never been involved in the gang culture, obviously, and I don't know that much about it other than what I see on TV, but you always hear about shit about like getting jumped in for life and getting out of a gang is very difficult. Like, when you moved away, was there any like heat about that? About like, oh, you're not down anymore?
I saw these dudes. I went back to visit. Mm-hmm. I went to a mall in the Bay, and I went back to visit, and I saw my whole crew there hanging out, and I hadn't seen anybody in like a year or two. Mm-hmm. And nothing happened. I thought something was going to happen. I was rolling with my best friend from Oakland. I was like, hey, dog, I'm about to get tuned up right now. Mm-hmm. Just kick back, you know. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want him getting fucked up, too. And these dudes all walked up to me, and they were just like, what's up, man? Where you been at? I was like, man, I've been fucking homeless, dog. I'm in fucking Arizona now, you know. And they're like, well, you look skinny, like you've been on meth. I'm like, motherfucker, I'm always skinny, dog. I'm a skinny motherfucker.
Yeah, yeah.
And they just fucking said, all right, well, keep in touch, dog.
They just let it slide.
They're like, what you been doing? I'm like, I still ride for the click, dog. I'm just by myself, man.
Yeah, yeah. You know?
Then I showed them my tat, and everybody was like, yeah, that's tight, dog.
Oh, crazy. Back to Arizona.
Yeah.
You finally have a place.
Place.
Does it start to feel like home?
Yeah, dude. Arizona was the first time I really felt at home.
Yeah. What was that like? Did you feel like you were getting your little piece of normalcy that you look for?
Nah, because it wasn't normal at all. It was like, that's my acid era, you know? Just taking 10 strips of acid fucking every other day, going to raves all fucking day, just partying nonstop and being heavily into music. All I did was freestyle the jungle nonstop. That's all I did. Big fucking huge raves. Like, I'm talking, do you remember how big raves used to be?
Yeah, I mean, I never went to raves because I was in Alaska, but I saw pictures of raves and they looked enormous. And
they're huge.
Yeah.
And this was like, that's where I learned how to really move a crowd. Is like.
So, I mean, are there any embarrassing Mestizo pictures where you're in like giant Genko jeans and tight shirts?
I'm still kind of.
Mickey Mouse hands and shit?
No, you know why? Because the jungle kids were never really super about that shit. They were all into camo.
Oh, okay.
They're like camoed out all the time. Yeah. That's what jungle fools were into. You know, they're more like the hip-hop kids of the raves.
Right, scene, right. Know? How long did you stay in Arizona before the travel bug hit again?
Well, that's like when I connected with my mom. Then I went to move back to Vegas where she was living. Went to go stay with her for a few months. And that's when a bunch of shit went down before I moved to my mom's crib. And
was there like any falling out with your dad about moving back with your mom?
Nah, not at all.
He's cool.
He was cool with it.
Yeah.
But no, I was dating a girl for like a year and a half and shit, and we just fucking cut it off, and I was all upset, and I fucking moved in with her. I wanted to get the fuck out of Phoenix, so moved in with her, and then Mediocre hit me up, and he's like, "Yo, you want to move out to Chicago?"
How did Mediocre hit you up?
Well, in Phoenix, I was throwing shows. I was throwing hip-hop shows when I was about 18.
Mm-hmm.
And I was throwing a bunch of shit that people had never seen out there. I brought the Shapeshifters out and Off-White.
How are you hearing about these guys?
Well, I forget, man. Internet, somehow. Yeah. I was into it. I was into the whole underground hip-hop shit as soon as, like, I heard Log Cabin and old Living Legends tapes. You
yeah,
know?
And that shit, but that shit like predates MySpace. It predates fucking.
Yeah,
like,
I
that
have
was
no
like you
idea.
Had to be deep into the internet to find that shit back
yeah,
then.
Yeah, deep into it. And I was looking for it and it was finding me too. You know what I mean? I was like, had a spiritual connection with it.
Right,
you know
right.
Mean?
You're just this 18 year old dude going, oh, hey, do you guys want to come to Arizona? And like.
Well, I was kind of. I was a big battle MC out there. I was ripping shit up out there, fucking, and I was doing a lot of shows out there, and all the stuff that was going on was kind of the same shit that was going on in underground hip hop was going on in Arizona, but the kids in Arizona didn't know what was going on anywhere else, really. You know?
Yeah, that's crazy. Cause, well, I mean, because Phoenix is like that's a hard market nowadays. Like,
super hard. Nobody even comes out to shows.
Yeah,
dude.
Like underground hip hop is not.
They come out for Brother Ali. They'll come out for Atmosphere. But if you, like, come out as I mean, this is kind of true anywhere now, but if you come out as a smaller independent act,
yeah,
it's like nobody gives a shit. They're not coming out to support.
Yeah, that's a real tough market. Whereas, like, I feel like Tucson is a good market for underground hip-hop.
Tucson's a great,
you know,
great, great market.
And, like, Albuquerque is awesome for underground hip-hop, but, like, yeah, for some reason, Phoenix, Scottsdale, Tempe, it's just, like, hard
Haterville,
there.
Bro. It's hard hater, there. Haterville.
Well, it's kind of, like, more broed out or something a little
nah,
bit.
Nah, there's a bunch of hip-hop kids. It's just, I don't know why, man. There's a small community of people.
Yeah.
And they all do their thing and they stick with each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I still don't pull a big draw out there. I did with Brother Ali. Me and him fucking played a show out there and that was tight.
Nice.
But, you know, it was his people came out.
So when you were bringing kids out to play shows in Phoenix, were you opening up for them and stuff?
No.
No? Just promoting? No.
Yeah, I promoted.
Were you making money off of it?
Yeah, hell yeah. I was making a grip. I had a foolproof plan, dude.
What was
I
the
knew
plan?
How to make money off of shows, off of bringing people out that nobody knew, because nobody knew who Off-White was out there. Nobody knew who Quell was, and barely anybody had seen the Shapeshifters out there. So.
Yeah. So what, you would bring them on? What was the foolproof plan? Or is it still
I'd throw
a secret?
Battles. I'd get all these kids from around the scene.
Yeah.
I'd say, yo, you know, I'm going to have you battle. I'd do two rounds first, then I'd have the last round, like the championship round, after all the after all the performances.
Yeah.
So that way everybody stays around and they watch the performance, and then everybody gets enlightened to who was performing and enjoy the performance, go home a fan, and also get to see a battle.
What was the biggest show you think that you threw in Phoenix?
Oh, they were all small.
Yeah.
They were all underground shows, but they were fucking like packed.
Like 300, 400. That's big.
And a small fucking venue.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
So
what, Galapagos guys took a liking to you after bringing them out?
Me and Meaty hit it off right away.
Yeah.
Me and Quell did too. Well, more so me and Meaty, you know. Meaty was the one that had me bring Quell out because he was like, yo, why don't you bring Quell out? I brought Off-White because, of course, you know, he's Filipino. And I was like, yeah, let me get a Filipino dude out here.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, me and Meaty hit it off. I went to visit him in Chicago, went to all the Galapagos Studios shit, made a track with Quell, and went home, and that was it. We were all homies after that.
Did you and Quell get along easily from the get-go?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
He's an interesting dude, man.
I don't know him personally at all. I just know that, like, notoriously on the internet, he seems like
He seems like a dickhead on the internet.
Well, not even a dickhead. He just seems like he's, like, a hard dude to get along with occasionally.
He's
or, like,
you
very
know what's
opinionated.
Funny? He's really not. He's so social, man.
Yeah.
He's social as fuck, but he's... some reason, his shit comes out on the internet. Like a lot of kids' shit do, you know? It's like... all the shit he wants to say to people, just it comes out sporadically at times, I think, you know?
Right, right. Yeah,
I think he knows that, too.
Everybody's been that dude on the internet that says the wrong shit.
Yeah,
it's just like, you know.
I've tried my hardest to keep that shit off of the internet.
Oh,
man.
Dude, I saw a post the other day on some forum like that I made 5 years ago, and I'm like, oh, I can't fucking believe that I said that. Like, what was the point? I'm like, what was the point of me saying that?
Yeah, that's kind of hard for this generation because it's like they're going to look back. They're going to actually physically see what they were like back in the day.
Exactly, because I've learned over the years that just like, what's the point? Like, bite your fucking tongue. There's no point in like spewing the negativity just to prove that like you fucking...
it makes you look bad too.
It does, and it does. I just had a conversation with somebody about this on YouTube. Like, I saw some kid that I know vaguely from around like just hate on this video of the homie, and like, and I was just like, yo man, like, what was the point of that, you know?
Yeah.
And then he sent me a private message like, I'm not gonna bite my tongue and yada yada, and I said, look man, you're a fucking nobody, and I'm a fucking nobody, and we're all nobodies, and as soon as you figure that out, the better off you'll be. You know what I mean? Like, there's no point in letting your mouth run for no fucking reason. Like,
I feel like everybody just, I mean, deep down inside, every human being wants attention. They want a part of your attention.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
If you're getting attention, they want a part of it.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So, I don't know. I've never been an attention getter online. Like, I've gone after a few dudes that wrote shitty reviews about me, but then I thought about it.
Oh,
like,
man,
why would I even write you a fucking email, take out time, and you took out time to do the same shit? Like, what the fuck's the point?
I used to get so mad at bad reviews, and I could give a fuck now. So, Meaty hits you up and says, oh, come to Chicago?
Yeah.
And so, you just up and
dip.
And
so, I said, all right, I'm going to Chicago.
Were you with the chick at that time?
Nah, I was.
You already broke up.
I was a player.
So, were you leaving Phoenix or Las Vegas?
Vegas.
You left Vegas.
Yeah, left Vegas.
Were you throwing shows in Vegas too?
Left Vegas with a GED.
Oh, okay. So you went back and got
and
your GED.
And a driver's license.
Bang, bang. Nice. So, did you drive up to Chicago?
No, I flew out. Flew out with a backpack.
And nothing else?
Nothing else.
Did you have a place to stay when you got there? Meaty just had you crash?
Yeah, no, Meaty had an apartment ready for us, so.
Nice.
Went there and.
Did you have to get a job when you got there?
Yeah, I got a job at a movie theater.
At a movie theater? What were you doing there? Screening or flying
some
a slinging popcorn?
Some independent movie theater, but it was tight. Yeah. It was super tight. Yeah. I love it. I wrote a whole album fucking being there, you know?
Nice. Like just while the movies are playing. Like, were you the projector?
No, I was a fucking usher and attendant and nice. Dude at the kiosk and selling tickets
just
and shit like that.
Jack of all trades at the movie theater.
I fucking, you know, I'll tell you what, if there's one job I've ever loved in my life, it's working at a movie theater.
Really?
I've worked at about five of them.
No
so,
shit. Yeah. Why do you love it so much?
Because I love movies, man. I just love being in that atmosphere.
Yeah.
I feel like the atmosphere at a movie theater is perfect for my personality. You know what I mean?
It's quiet.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Be attentive to watching some art and eat popcorn and hot dogs, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Like, other than getting a job, like, what's the scene like in Chicago when you got
there?
It
was a big bar scene. And Galapagos was already kind of popping when I got out there. So it was like I was rolling with those dudes at Grip everywhere. And
it wasn't something where Meaty was like, hey, I want you to be in the crew, so will you move up here?
No, it wasn't like that at all. And I didn't even have any expectations moving out there. I was just like, fuck it. Yeah, I'll go to Chicago. I want to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. But that's the thing is, like, when I first started hearing about you and then eventually met you, it was like, oh, it's Mestizo from Galapagos 4.
Yeah, so, like,
when was it after living up there and being around those guys where it was like, hey, okay, you're part of Galapagos 4 now?
I think Jeff Kuglitz, who owns the label, he heard some of my shit. And I was hosting their nights. I was just hosting. I was hosting, giving free drinks and all that shit. Mm-hmm. And kicking it with the homies. And Jeff had heard my shit, some old shit that I did. And he was like, yo, I want to put your album out. And I was like, all right, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it.
Nice.
Next week, I set up a tour with, I can't remember who it was, one of Robust friends. And that was like our first shit and sparked everything off. And we just started touring the Grip.
Where all did you guys tour to? Throughout the Midwest?
Mainly Midwest and West Coast. We did the East Coast and the South a few times. And then we did Europe a bunch of times.
How did you figure out how to tour on your own?
I just kind of figured it out, like really being kind of a people person.
Mm-hmm.
Just having connections just through people, you know. Found out about a bunch of promoters or would hit up certain clubs and made use of the internet of looking online, like who's popping and what people are throwing, what shows. I think from promoting shows, it helped me understand the mind of a promoter a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I
and
just,
when was this, like around 03 or something?
This was 02, 03.
Yeah. Chicago at the time had like I feel like it had this aura of being like a scene full of like hater dudes. Like everybody in Chicago was kind of against each other. Did you feel like that? That's what
I was in the scene, so for me it wasn't like that.
Oh, okay.
So
from the outside looking in, I always heard like that Chicago was like everyone was just very competitive with each other and didn't really look out for each other.
You know what? I think it was like that, but I got along with everybody, man. From the moment to Nacrobats to all of those dudes, like I was cool with all of them, man.
Did you ever meet Open Mike while you were in Chicago?
Nah, I never met Open Mike, but his best friend Riff Napalm was on.
Because I was gonna say I know he ran with some of the. He wasn't in Nacrobats, but I know he knows.
I
some
thought
of
he
those
was
guys.
In Nacrobats.
He may or may not have been. I think he's been on Nacrobat projects, but wasn't officially in there. But like shouting out Nacrobats made me think, oh, I wonder if you ever met Mike in a previous life, you know?
Man, we never met until I moved out here.
Mm-hmm. So how long did you stay in Chicago and how many records did you put out with Galapagos?
I put out 3 records with Galapagos and I stayed there for 2.5 years.
Shout them out. What are they called?
Life Like Movie, me and Mike Gal did Blind Faith and Dream State.
Can they still be found on the internet pretty easily?
Yeah, you can find them.
On iTunes or shit? All right.
Yeah, still goes Galapagos.
Nice. What are you currently working on?
Just like mainly self-produced shit right now. I'm trying to figure out a sound that I want to do now, you know? Like, I'm trying to always do something different.
Yeah.
But I'm in a position right now where I'm not rushing it no more. I don't want to do that shit anymore because it just comes out sloppy to me.
Right.
So I'm trying to put more personal intent and morals into my fucking music, you know? Again.
Right.
I got caught up in this whole fucking L.A. scene for a little bit, you know?
Yeah, let's talk about how did you end up in L.A.?
My girlfriend.
Where did you meet her?
When I was on tour with Quell. Me and Quell were touring.
Oh, no shit. So you met her while you were in L.A.?
Yeah.
Where were you playing a show at?
Somewhere in Pomona. We got in a big-ass fight, too. It was a big rumble.
At the Glass House?
No, it wasn't the Glass House. It was like some Mexican spot. It was right by the Glass House, though.
How did the fight start?
I can't remember what happened, but somebody thought somebody stole his name, like Quasar stole his name. And it just never happened like that. And Quell, being Quell, I think he went out and fucking started shit with the dude. And Meaty got punched in the face, or punched some dude in the face. And
yeah.
All out war happened. Yeah. You know?
So you're on tour and a fight starts, but somehow that night you meet the girl that you're still with to this day, yeah?
Yeah. 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 And so, I mean, it's breakup to makeup, but yeah, we're still together.
Right.
9 years,
right.
Bro.
Yeah. Oh, 9 years. Wow.
Yeah, nine years.
So do you guys like take numbers and you're texting back and forth the whole time that you're on that tour still?
No, I wasn't like that. I got with a girl right after that, after I met her.
Okay.
It took about a year before we
How did you guys
again.
Stay in contact for a year? Through like MySpace or some shit?
Nah, through cell phone shit.
Cell phone
stuff. I was living on a farm.
Oh wow.
Growing weed, fucking
Where?
Doing my thing.
In Chicago?
Up north, nah. This was after. I left Chicago 2.5 years after, and then I was still touring and doing shit with those guys. And Quell and Jeff moved out to Oakland, so...
Oh,
I had Galapagos kind of next door to me.
So you guys all migrated to Northern California, but you're still touring together and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
that makes sense. So you guys are keeping contact on a cell phone. Then when do you decide like, oh shit, I think this is something. Perhaps I should move to LA.
I don't know. I'm just spontaneous like that. I was like, fuck it. I'll go to LA, you know?
Yeah. And that had to be around like what? 06?
No, that was 04. No, it had to be 05 because that's when I was turntable lab too.
Right, right. Oh, yeah. And 05 is when I met you because...
No, it was 04. I moved here in 04.
But I think I met you around 05 because that's when I started hella coming to LA a lot for shows and stuff. And
I thought you already lived here.
No, I didn't move here till 07.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I was down here like pretty much every weekend to either play shows or go to shows or... host a show.
Yeah.
Like people, it's funny, like people used to always ask me like how do you get involved in the scene, and I'm like, I just came down all the time. Like I didn't live here, but I just made sure to be here. Like show your face and talk
That's
to
really
people.
All you gotta do is just be in each other's faces.
Talk to people. You know what I mean? If you keep seeing the same person, you're eventually gonna say, what's up? You look familiar, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You moved to LA.
Mm-hmm.
When did do you still
I associate with them. I just stopped doing music for personal reasons, you know.
Oh, so you didn't do music for a while. How long was that?
No, I stopped doing music with Galapagos.
Oh, okay.
Probably after the Dream State shit. And then it was weird because I had a bunch of people asking me to put out some records on their labels. And I held off. And then all of a sudden, nothing, you know. And I was like, fuck. I started asking again to these dudes and they weren't down for it. And, me and Adam Weiss were actually working with Daddy Kev.
Yeah, you guys both were like some of his first interns, right?
Yeah. I went to recording engineering school and I needed to get some hours for something. And Kev had just started Alpha Pup. He started the digital distribution. Shout out to Daddy Kev. I love you.
Yeah.
And he was like, yo, why don't you just do your digital distribution through me and just start a label? You know, he's like, if you had a label... And then all of a sudden, boom, started the Maquina Muerte shit.
And what year was that in?
That was...
09?
Yeah, I think it was 09.
How did the Maquina Muerte thing become an idea?
I mean, me and Isaiah always talked about putting like a super group together.
When did you guys meet? Because you guys
me
were really
and Isaiah
close.
Met a long time ago. That was my Arizona days. Shit.
When you were in Phoenix?
Yeah.
But he's from Tucson, right?
Yeah, he's from Tucson, but Merce introduced me and Isaiah.
Oh, okay. Well, did you bring Merce out for a show or something?
Nah. Merce knew one of my homeboys, and I was always at the Living Legend shows and shit, and I can't remember how me and Merce met, but he kind of took me under his wing right away. And I was showing him beats and raps, and he knew about me and shit, and he knew about Isaiah, and he was like, yo, he played a show one day in Phoenix, and I battled at it, and he brought Isaiah up, and that was the first time I met him.
That's funny. I think my first time seeing Isaiah was in that same Scribble Jam 05 where I saw Diplo.
Right.
Because he rolled there with Merce to the Scribble Jam.
Yeah.
And for those of you guys, Isaiah is like a pretty scary looking dude. You know, covered in tattoos, that gold
especially
teeth.
Especially back then. He was stocky as hell.
Dude, and in 05, being covered in tattoos was some very like
unorthodox
shit. Now it's like a lot of people are covered head to toe with tattoos. It's a thing now. But back then, that was like, whoa. So to see this dude at Scribble Jam with the teeth in and the head tattoos, I was like, yo, this motherfucker looks like he could beat up everyone at Scribble Jam.
He probably could have.
Yeah, and he's rolling around Mercer. That was the first time I saw him. I didn't realize, like, I didn't know who he was until a couple years later when DJ Elite told me about him.
Yeah.
So you guys met and just became close brothers.
Well, it's because me and him were kind of like, he was kind of the weird up-and-coming rapper in his city, and I was the weird up-and-coming rapper in my city. So it was like, Merce heard both of us and was like, oh, you guys should fucking do something together, man. You know what I mean? And it wasn't until a while later that we even started making music together.
But was it an instant click of a friendship?
Yeah, we were cool, man, right away. It's like, you know, Isaiah's the same way, man. He's gotten through a rough-ass childhood, and you know, he's a soldier, man, and you just kind of have mutual respect for street kids, you know?
Right,
we have mutual respect for each other.
And I feel like when you moved to L.A., you were kind of still, you would go out to Arizona just to disappear every once in a while or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, a lot,
because I know I would lose contact with you for a couple months, and I'd be like, where the fuck are you? And you're like, oh, I was in Arizona, but now I'm back.
Yeah, I did. It took me a while to kind of settle into anything.
Were you going to Phoenix or Tucson?
Both.
Yeah.
And Flagstaff. Kip Killigan, who's one of my best homies too, man, he lives up in Flagstaff and does a lot of music with me, and he was on Galapagos too.
How does Maquina Muerte become an idea?
Oh, like I was saying, we wanted to put a bunch of rappers together that were our homies that we thought were dope, and we wanted to, you know, showcase them and showcase ourselves. And the idea is, you know, there's power in numbers. And there really is. You know, it's like more people are going to fucking pay attention to a big crew of people than they will just to one person. Easier and faster, personally, I would say. Unless you have, you know, super PR and all that kind of shit. So it worked out for us, you know what I mean? So
yeah, for a while, it seems like you guys were gathering up a whole army.
Yeah, we still got a whole army. It's just everybody's kind of, we're still kind of coming into fruition, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's definitely like a growing process, and you got to figure it out as you go, I'm sure. Right?
Well, you know, we kind of hit the seed fucking rowdy and off and running, you know? So it's like...
Yeah, tell me about the, like, you guys did hit the scene definitely rowdy. What was the initial kind of, like, idea or plan, you know what I mean? Was it like, let's go out and fucking put our feet down and show people who we are? Like,
nah, it wasn't that at all, dude. I think it was just we all came together and everybody was already like that, and then it just fucking worked out that way, you know?
Because I remember when it started, people would be like, wait, is Maquina Muerte a gang? You know what I mean? And I was like, I don't think so. It was a record label.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. I know we got that misconception a lot, man. It's just you had a bunch of dudes that all looked the same. Of course they fucking look like a gang, you know what I mean?
Who all was in it? Who the initial two were obviously you and Isaiah, yeah? Who was the next person you reached out to?
Well, Alex, you know, Rape Wolf. Wolf was down.
30 names, bruh.
Surf Dot and Cadillac.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what drew you to those guys?
I mean, we're all homies. The thing is, we already all kicked it together all the time. We did music together all the time. So it only made sense just to fucking start a record label, you know, and start putting people's shit out. And I already knew how to kind of start a record label, not run it, obviously. I haven't fucking... Isaiah's running the whole thing. Shouts to Isaiah for fucking holding it down. But, you know, with Galapagos, I kind of had the experience and the connect with Kev to start a record label and kind of figure this shit out right as all this was turning into digital distribution and only digital media, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, worked out good.
Yeah.
I didn't believe in it at first. So I was like, we got to do CDs, records, only merch all the time. Fuck digital shit.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Kev was fucking 3 years ahead of everybody, dude.
Yeah, he was very smart to realize that, like, no one was going to be buying CDs in a very short period of
time. That's what he told me. I was like, fuck you. No, you're not right, you know? And Gaslab told me, underground hip-hop's dead. I was like, fuck you, you're not right. And boom, both of those things fucking came into play. And I was like, yeah.
Like, the whole low-end scene, I feel like for a while, when it was, like, not to say it's not at its peak, but when it was like super duper at its peak, like all the fucking producer dudes were like so anti-rap music.
Yeah.
And it's like crazy because now, you know, then Fly Low comes out as Captain Murphy and shit. And it's all of a sudden everybody's like, oh, wait, I want to be down with rap again. How do you feel about that?
I think, you know, I was actually all right with it, man, because I already knew all those dudes and I saw what they were doing. At first, I was kind of bitter. I was like, all these dudes are doing are biting Jay Dilla. Fuck all that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And really what it was is that producers were finally coming into their own, and like it wasn't like they needed a rapper to fucking hold them down anymore. They could be their own artist, you know what I mean? So I was cool with it. And I did see that fucking, you know, rap kind of took a background. Yeah, I was all right with it, man.
How's life right now?
Life's cool, man.
Life's cool?
Yeah, hell yeah.
What's your day-to-day like right now?
My day-to-day is... Shit, I'm researching a lot, man. I'm trying to become an immortal man. I'm learning how to fucking grow my own food and pack for the winters and hunt and all that shit. You know, everything a man should know how to do, that's what I'm learning how to do. And how to control my liquor and my drug use, that's what I'm doing. I'm just a nut. I've always been a nut. You know what I mean? Like, I come from a drug background, so that's all I've really known, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm fucking constantly partying, but the older I get, I'm starting to realize, oh, maybe.
Has it ever been something that's been a problem? Have you ever had to, like, take a step back?
I think some people think it's been a problem for me. And I know it's probably been a problem at times, but I'm just a wild dude, and I think that's normal.
Yeah. You know? Does it help you reach an inner peace? Like, do you feel more
centered?
No, not
at all. I just like getting fucked up. It makes me get crazier, and that's what I love.
Really?
I love being crazy and chaotic, you know?
Yeah,
that's I'm great. All about it. Chaos is my shit.
Well, it's funny that you say you love chaos and being around chaotic things, because earlier you said you're seeking normalcy.
That's what I am seeking, but I love fucking chaos, dude.
Yeah.
It's two sides to me. I'm either cool as shit or I'm a fucking maniac, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everybody knows that about me that knows me, you know? It's like, you never know what you're going to get with me, but that's what I'm trying to work on.
Right.
You know what I mean? Becoming a man and fucking being a solid dude, you know what I mean?
Right.
So.
We started off talking earlier about when you were at Turntable Lab. How long were you at Turntable Lab, and then when did you switch over to the
Fresh Jive?
Yeah, the Reserve Store, Fresh Jive.
I don't remember. It was like 2 years there, and then fucking Fresh Jive the rest of the time. So
yeah. A common thread that seems to happen with a lot of people on this show is like everybody's kind of always a little up on shit, and like you're one of those dudes who's like super up on shit. And we had Mike G on last episode, and I was talking about how you were the first person to put me on to Odd Future. When you were at Fairfax, being immersed in it, did you know that something was bubbling there?
Yeah, I did, but I thought it was gay, you know?
How so?
I didn't like it. It went through two cycles. Now it went through three cycles.
What was the first?
The first cycle was all over print shit.
Right.
Which is like, you know, the 100 sparked off everything with the Paisley print. Paisley t-shirts, boom, fucking all over everything. And it was nothing but fucking these trendy kids. And I hate trends. I can't stand them. Mm. I can't stand seeing individuals not being individuals. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, people just fucking chasing after whatever everybody else is doing, and that's what happened.
Which is funny, because, you know, I used to wear Fresh Jive when I was a young kid, like in seventh, eighth grade.
Yeah.
And so then when I saw Fresh Jive coming back, I was stoked. I was like, oh, fuck yeah, Fresh Jive. But you know what my first, like, new Fresh Jive shirt was?
What?
An all-over print.
It's all right, man. I didn't think the all-over print shit was whack, but I thought that just the way that it got exploited.
Man.
It got exploited really fast.
Yeah,
you know? It was like
all
of a sudden, every fucking company, big or small.
I feel like that was around 07, 08, or like 06, 07, when like, man, all over print was like
nonstop,
everything.
Dude. Nonstop.
I was glad when that was over.
I was glad when that was over too.
Yeah.
But that a lot of that shit died. Fairfax died down, and then it came back, and it came back kind of more... How should I put this? It was just more sophisticated, you know what I mean? And more for like adult kids.
Yeah, I was actually, when you were working at the Fresh Eye Store and Reserve, it was really going through this kind of very grown man.
Yeah.
I don't think it was actually appealing to a lot of kids that were really on the block, because it was like some grown up, like, let's get on a yacht type shit.
You know what
I mean?
But that was cool.
I was down. I liked it.
That shit, I mean, it kind of evolved men's fashion, you know, and like also the way that young kids dress. Now kids are dressing in dress shirts and fucking no socks and, you know, loafers and all that shit, which is cool, you know, like makes kids look classy. But I don't know. That's the second cycle of it. And then the third cycle is whatever Odd Future is doing on Fairfax. That's what's cracking.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were super early on Odd Future because those were like your interns.
Yeah.
So I was working at a... where was I working? I was working at like a computer lab or like a retouching house or something. And we were talking online, I think, or something. And you were like, oh, check out this video of my little homies. And you sent me the French video.
Oh, yeah. I remember that? I posted that up. I was like, hey, this is my little homies. I didn't know anything was popping with them. I was just like, yo, trying to support, you know?
Yeah, and I remember talking to him just being like, wow, this is like, this shit is crazy. But it was kind of in one ear and out the other. I was like, oh, this is fucking tight. But then I didn't think anything of it. I was like, oh, they just made a tight video. And lo and behold, is like...
It's crazy. I didn't, you know, during that time, I had no idea what was going on. I think I left Fresh Jive a little later after they started really hitting the music shit.
Yeah.
And everybody was asking me about him. I was like, what the fuck are you asking me about Tyler for? You know what I mean? Like, fucking everybody in the scene was like, what's up with Odd Future? Can I hook up with him? I'm like, why you want to hook up with Odd Future, dog? It's just fucking Tyler and homies and shit. Why?
Right, right.
And they're like, nah, those kids are fucking hard. You know what I mean?
What was your introduction to those fools? Like, they're just a bunch of little skate rat kids?
Yeah, they just come hang out with me at the store. I mean, all the kids that got shooed off from fucking, like, Supreme and everything just came to hang with me, and I kind of just gave them a place to kick it, you know?
Yeah. And did you start letting them, like, stock shirts and shit like that? Like, what? Like, how did they get into it?
Let them fucking come work in the store for merch and do my job for merch and let me just kick it, you know?
Tight. Do you ever see those fools around now?
Yeah, I see them all the time. I probably see them more than I used to see them.
Really? What's it like now?
It's cool. It's still the same.
I'm not like, I was never...
And I tell fucking all these dudes this, you know, I was never like the biggest fan of theirs. It was like, I'm the OG, and the shit that they were doing, I was like, oh yeah, that's kind of like underground shit. It's like ours.
Right, right.
And like, nah, we don't like that shit.
I mean, it's got to be a trip to fucking see them everywhere, though. Like, that's fucking strange.
It's a trip, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're still the same motherfuckers to me, you know what I mean? I wouldn't expect any different from them. They're the homies and shit.
Yeah, that's cool, man. It's a trip to see shit that you're so close to blow, because I've never really talked about this on the podcast, but like, I did a podcast with Macklemore like about a year and a half ago, two years ago.
Really?
Yeah, I had him on the old podcast that I used to do, and I knew that shit was bubbling because I started following when he had like 10,000 Twitter followers, and then was trying to get him on the show, and by the time I got him on the show, he had 50,000 Twitter followers. Wow. And then when I saw him perform in the studio, I was like, oh, like this is something. But if you'd have asked me, is he going to have like 3 number one hit records in a row, I'd have been like, you're kind of tripping. That's crazy, because he's like an underground dude.
Yeah.
And so now to see him everywhere and have my mom asking me about him and shit, that shit is so crazy,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, it's nuts.
It goes fast, man. It's crazy.
I'm really extremely proud of fucking Tyler and all the kids fucking really shaping this generation, dude. They shaped this generation.
Yeah, because initially it was like they were reshaping the music industry, but now you're right. They definitely like have become an influential figure in their generation of kids.
I'm proud of them, man. Yeah. It's like those kids, I was super impressed by them before any of that shit, just for like taking pictures, making their own videos, making their own beats, making their own clothes, dressing their own way, skating, fucking doing rap music, you know, like
it was a full creative entity.
They worked hard, man.
Yeah, and I definitely think like in some ways kids from their generation are gonna look back the way that like we might look back at like Nirvana and shit.
Yeah.
Like it was a real like shift in the dynamic of things.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah.
And the way that they perform too, you know, it's like they brought back fucking stage diving and mosh pits at fucking rap shows. You never seen that shit. You
right.
Know?
Yeah, it's crazy, man. So what's next for Mestizo?
Shit, man. I'm taking it day by day for life-wise, you know. But right now I'm working on something really epic for me. You know what I mean? Like I don't really want to say anything much because until it happens, but performance-wise and touring and music, like I'm working on something that's respectable as a respectable artist, you know what I mean? I really just want to be a fucking William Burroughs type of dude, you know what I mean?
Hopefully without all the heroin.
And not gay. I'm not gay.
Exactly. What are some of your like musical influences right now? Like, have you been listening to like a lot of new wave or anything like that?
Yeah, actually, I do. I listen to a lot of fucking new wave. I mean, being from the electronic scene, I've always listened to electronic music.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, new wave for sure.
And what you guys are doing, like, with you and Serp and Alex and Isaiah, like, I feel like it's got this dark kind of, like, Morrissey Cure thing going on with, like, a hip-hop twist.
We found kind of one of our niches, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, we're comfortable with it. Because for me personally, like, I was never super comfortable with just hip-hop shit. I'm super comfortable with the gangster beat shit, but it's not totally what I'm into either. And I'm into rock heavily. My pops is a guitarist, and, yeah. and I've always been around a lot of fucking new wave and rock and punk, you know? So I think that's like, we're finally being able to draw our inspiration and use it in our music, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's
so cool, it's coming out like that. And it, I personally am just, I love fucking new wave music, man. I'm fucking all about it, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Well, hey, man, I think that's going to bring us to the end of the show.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So I want to thank you for coming in. Yeah, absolutely. It's been a long time coming. Before we get out of here, tell the people where they can find you online.
You can find me at maquinomuerte.com. You can find me Twitter, Mestizo Muerte. You can find me SoundCloud, Mestizo Muerte. You can find me at mestizo.bandcamp. I'm so bad at the internet. Just look for me. That's all you got to do.
Google me.
Google me.
My name is Lee, but you guys might know me as Intuition, and you can find us on Twitter at That's Kinda Neat. You can follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. You can follow my man, Ben Shim, behind the board, suffering through the extraneous heat today with a fan blowing in his face because Atwater Village is hot as fuck. You can find him at I Am Database, base with two S's. Much appreciation for always making shit sound buttery. We're coming live from the Cosmic Zoo. You can find them, cosmiczoo.org, run by the magnanimous Daddy Kevin, James No Can Do McCall. Thank you to them. Thanks to my man Mestizo.
Yeah, Kinda Neat podcast.
Bang, this was Kinda Neat. Thank you.